So I look at AI as a tool, and that tool can be used to help us build relationships with customers. So I know more about what they need in advance, and that's what I'm excited about. I'm not excited about the calculations that go into that. I'm excited about what that tool is going to allow us to do.
That was Jana Eggers, the CEO of Narrowlogix, a company whose AI platform is effectively a matching engine. What's that, you say? Well, if you want to match buyers and sellers or match jobs to people, you name it, it's all about data and AI. Narrowlogix helps companies connect their data by building a network of explicit and inferred connections across all that data so you can actually do something meaningful. Today on the show, Jana and I are going to be talking about the realities of artificial intelligence, what it's actually good for, where to use it, and how to run a successful AI project. It's going to be a great discussion, so stick around. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. Jana, good to be with you today. How are you doing?
It's great to be with you as well, and I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
So let's dig a little bit into Narrowlogix. You actually highlight a bunch of different industries that in my mind are quite different, whether it's e-commerce or healthcare, financial services. Do you have different models for each, or does that come from your customers? How do you begin to get that vertical slice as a solution built?
That's such a great question. Our vertical slice is more about the integration of the data. So what tools are each of those industries using? You can think of our tool as being, and I hate to use old terminology, but a self-building expert system. So you have experts. Your expertise in a lot of enterprises is in their data. So how do we extract that expertise out of that data and get the machine to start responding so that you can then focus again on those customer relationships instead of focusing on doing the analytics behind figuring out which questions to ask?
So we talk about data. It's been written up in a couple articles. It's one of your case studies around Procter & Gamble, and it's this Olay Skin Advisor. So what kind of data do you bring to the table, and does it, when you were working on the solution with them, did they say, look, we need more. We need additional third-party data to the system. I got to go scrape other sites. How did you kind of build the solution set for that, thinking about the data that's got to come in?
Honestly, I really encourage companies, start with your own data first. That's data that you're experts in, and you understand that better than you understand data you would augment with. So P&G and Olay Skin Advisor is a great example. The primary data there is data on their products. They know that. They know it well. And so most companies think they don't have enough data to do AI. You'd be surprised at how little you actually need to do good quality AI. And the great thing about that is you don't get lost in data you don't understand.
Interesting. Now, you might use the same machine learning algorithm for Olay as you might use for, I don't know, a government solution. You're generating these knowledge graphs. Talk to me a little bit more about how that happens.
So for us, what we're doing is trying to extract the knowledge out of data that's in a company. So that data could be, you mentioned the Olay Skin Advisor, that data could be about my products and how they relate and what things they solve for a customer. Or that data could be information about, we work with the intelligence community, it could be about events that happen around the world. How are those related? The places, the people, the governments that are involved, things like that. That's what we're doing, is we're taking in data, we're seeing how it's associated with each other, and we're building a big knowledge graph out of an enterprise data. But the focus really is solving a problem. So for a Procter & Gamble, that problem is putting a skincare consultant in the palm of everyone's hand. For the intelligence community, it's making sure that an analyst sees the events that are most important to their mission.
And as you say, it's all about, when you introduce the company, it's all about the relationships of the data. And I like the kind of the Venn diagram, the visual Venn diagram I've got of the data and the tools and the business app. So you mentioned that it seems like, you know, companies should have enough data to do some AI projects going on. So what do you think is holding people back? Is it the data, or is they're just not getting around to focusing on doing the right type of AI that they can do?
I think that one of the challenges is organization-wise. Actually, I did a talk, it's been about a year now, that I titled, It's the Organization Stupid. And the reason why I came up with that is I read an article that was all about somebody putting some AI into their place. And the title was something like How We Built Our Insights Engine. And I thought it was going to be about technology. And when I read it, the entire article was about organization. And that's when I had my, you know, kind of facepalm moment where I was like, oh, that's it. It's the organization, stupid. And so I believe that's really what's holding most people back. They'll use the excuse of data, or they'll use the excuse of we don't have the expertise, we're not AI experts. All of that's available. You have enough data. You have the business problems. Your issue is organization. And the reason why organization is an issue is because we're really built, especially in large companies, in silos. And AI goes across the silos. And that's the biggest challenge.
I like the point of leadership. What's your sense in terms of if AI is the panacea yet? And I guess I'm going to make the reference. You talked about Kasparov blowing a deep blue game, and it was a bug in the AI. What's your sense of where AI is today then in terms of its readiness, I think, is the question.
I think it's more ready than we give it credit for, because we do see some of the problems that come out, and some of them are quite terrible. But, you know, the quick and easy ones that we get often are, you know, Amazon recommends me this or Netflix recommends me this and it's bad. You know, I don't like it. And so people kind of see that every day and they think that's stupid. And my point with that is, you know, Amazon and Netflix are really just trying to get you to that next something. They don't really care what the next something is. Whereas most companies really care what the next, you know, P&G cares not to recommend to you five different eye creams. Amazon wouldn't care if you bought five different eye creams.
Right.
And so that's the difference, is they're actually talking about a different problem. Amazon's solving for something different than a Procter & Gamble is or a Netflix is. And so that's what I mean by that, you know, kind of holy trinity of AI being your business problem, your tools or your AI, and your data. And so that's where I'd say it's much more capable. People are just trying to reapply a technology that isn't a right fit for their problem. And that's where they run into problems.
Very interesting. And I think the loyalty issue from a P&G perspective is very different than the loyalty, say, from an Amazon issue. Loyalty to a brand versus a transactional system, perhaps.
Yeah, that's such a great example, is, you know, really going back and understanding, well, what was Amazon trying to solve? And I do find that people are trying to just, you know, well, Amazon's big enough, so theirs must be best. It's like, well, it probably is the best for their problem, but your problem probably isn't their problem.
Now, do you see opportunities varying across different industries, which are kind of more ripe than others?
Yeah, I would say that the people that are more ripe for AI are the people who have really gone through a digital transformation. And I want to be really clear about that. Digital transformation doesn't mean going paperless and just being digital. It's much more about how are we going to leverage our digital data? What does it mean to us? Where does it fit into our processes? So what I think is exciting is there's been a huge change over the last 9 months in people that are really getting what digital transformation is. And if you go look at the Google Trends search, actually, digital transformation is growing at a faster pace than mobile first did when it first started going up the curve. And we had seen that. And so that's what I think is most exciting, is that people are starting to really think differently of how is digital going to transform my business. And they have a good analogy to how did mobile transform my business.
So let's get into a little bit of the basics of, you know, the basics for a successful AI project. I know you've thought about this a lot. A cool thing I read was that you're telling executives that artificial intelligence is only the rocket science of a bigger space program. Tell me more about what you mean by that.
You know, I've always said rocket science actually isn't that complicated. It's interesting, but it's not that complicated. What's really complicated is a space program. And so if you're looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, this AI, and all this expertise and everything, you're losing focus on the space program. And while you may get your rocketry right, you're actually going to miss because you don't know what your overall objective is. So I'd fit that into my framework again of, you know, my space program is my business results. What business results am I trying to drive? AI is a critical component to it because I'm never going to get up into space without the rockets. But I need to know where that rocket's going, what it's going to accomplish, how it's going to fit in with the rest of everything else. And it's down to a lot of details there. It isn't a great place to do a lot of small tests to really get the power. Otherwise, you're just going to continue to kill your AI projects. The power in AI is a larger scope.
Well, continue the dialogue, then what makes it right? I think the starting point then, and I think you've got a step one called defining and repeating a clear vision. Talk to me more then about how important vision is here and getting this right, getting your space program right.
So I think that the vision point is there's two key components to it. Obviously, what are you trying to achieve? The second component is intelligence is defined as the ability to learn. And learning means a continuous improvement and feedback loop. And most people right now that I see that are struggling some with AI are not understanding what learning means. So how do we turn ourselves into learning orgs? You know, if I'm just trying to replicate and do marginally better on my statistics, I would just use another analytics approach. Mm-hmm. If I want to use AI, that means that my KPIs might change. I might realize that there's an opportunity that I didn't see there. And if I don't know how I'm going to react to those learnings, that's where a problem comes in. So if I'm learning from customers and I'm learning that they do want to buy 5 eye creams because that's how they think about it. I want one in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. If I really have set the structure to say, no, we would never do that, I'm actually hindering the AI in that sense, right? So again, intelligence means ability to apply learnings. Learning means I've got to change. And as organizations, we're structured to be very deterministic and predictable.
Indeed. And so these KPIs and measurements along the way are the critical next set of steps to kind of get there.
Yes. And I think that's where you have to back up and say, I may have developed these KPIs, but were they really the right ones for my objective? My objective really is to have great relationship with customers and grow those customers, right? I may have the wrong KPIs set there, and I have to be willing to learn that.
And I think the last piece, and you mentioned it early on, that every recommendation is returned to a why. And that comes back to clear transparency and trust. And I'd love to get your sense of what your thoughts are on that. In my mind, there's a range. I mean, stakes could be very high. It could be a credit report or a medical report, or it could be low stakes. You just bought the Lamborghini. I think you should be buying a toaster. And if you get that wrong, we're probably okay. So give me more kind of what you mean when you're thinking about this returning why and how that's so important to you.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. When we're working in the intelligence community, some of those stakes can be very, very high, right? So it's really important that I get it right and we point them in the right direction. If I make a mistake in something that's consumer facing and low stakes, it's not directly that high. That said, it does impact my relationship with my customer. And if they start to not trust me because they're like, oh, you don't understand me. Why are you, you know, one of the biggest things that happens with Amazon, I will tell you, people ask me all the time, I just bought a toaster from them. Why are they telling me to look at more toasters? I'm not, there's a great one online recently about a woman who bought a toilet seat. And she said, I'm not a toilet seat addict. I'm not a toilet seat aficionado. I just needed a toilet seat. Please stop showing me toilet seats. Repeating things works really well for books, right? Because I'm going to buy a lot of different books, but I'm not going to buy a lot of toilet seats.
Shouldn't that be trained? Shouldn't that be caught in terms of really analyzing the data and transactions of what are repeat purchases versus not repeat purchases? Shouldn't that be caught as part of your learning system?
Absolutely. Amazon could absolutely fix that. The question is, do they have bigger levers other places? And so that's what you have to think about. Again, when you talk about which AI is right for me, It's really understanding what it's optimized for. And could they fix that? And could they sell other things? You know, if I did buy a toilet seat, you know, maybe I'm redoing my bathroom and they should be showing me faucets. Or maybe they should be showing me glue for the next thing that breaks. So they could solve that problem. What we don't know is what other problems they're solving instead, right? They may have something with a bigger opportunity for them. They know their business, and that's exactly the kind of learning that people need to get used to. It's not learning, oh, well, I could do this. It's learning, look, there's 15 things I could do. Which ones do I trade off to actually have the best reward for me?
So I've got two team questions, and I was going to go into the data science team question, but I'm not. I'm going to actually ask you about the non-data science team question where you said, don't just leave it to the engineers. It can't be a black box. You need product owners and ethicists and social scientists and lawyers. So tell me a little more about your thoughts around that space.
Yeah, AI is really very much a team sport. And what worries me, and I don't see this, this has really changed, I'd say, over the last year to year and a half, is people are not treating it as a SEAL Team 6 operation. You know, I'll just put those specialized engineers off in a corner and they'll go off and figure out the AI. AI has to be integrated. So, you know, first of all, you have to have product managers there. Secondly, you do need to think about the ethics. There's a lot of ethics involved in AI, which is, what data am I using? What is my risk? You know, your point about how risky is it to offer me another toaster? I'll give you an example that's come up multiple times where people said, a friend of mine died and I didn't know because you didn't show it to me in my newsfeed. Right? And so do we have ethics involved in, you know, what they're trying to do, you know, your Twitters and your Facebook, and it happens on both of them, by the way, and I've seen it multiple times. Do they have a responsibility in those news feeds to not just get you to click on something, but to engage you? Because people said, how is it possible that I didn't know that my friend from high school passed away?
Should you see a strong correlation then between doing the right job on transparency, whether it's around the transactions and why I'm recommending a toilet seat or glue, and trust, and that relationship that a company, whether it's an Amazon trying to sell you 5 eye creams or Procter & Gamble selling you the right eye cream, how does this all come down to the linkage between transparency and trust?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you brought it up before, like, when does it matter? And I think it goes even more specific. When does it matter for a company? Because it doesn't matter to Amazon that they're the product experts, because I don't expect Amazon to be the product experts. It does matter to me that Procter & Gamble and Olay are their own product experts, right? So that's part of that's my expectations. I expect them to be more right about the eye cream than I expect Amazon to be right.
It makes sense. Yeah. It's interesting. Just whenever I have to buy, and we buy on Amazon a lot, but if I need to buy something from a particular company, I go to the company's website and see what current products. If I want to buy a Samsung TV, Samsung, you know, they'll sell 100 on Amazon, you know, 2 years, 3 years old, 4 years. I want the latest one. I got to go to the Samsung website, get the model I want, and then decide if I'm going to buy it on Amazon or somewhere else. But I have to still go to the brand. I don't think a lot of people do that. Then they end up getting junk from Amazon.
You're exactly right that we make those choices, but that transparency has to be there. What is Amazon trying to do? And I do think they're working on transparency. They'll say, you know, they're transparent with the fact that they say customers who bought this also bought this. That's transparent. Where am I getting this? It's because people bought it together. It may make no sense at all, right? Because how many times do you have things in your basket that are completely unrelated?
Right. And Facebook and Amazon don't share their data. But if you posted on Facebook, I'm renovating my house, and then Amazon said, hey, you're renovating your house, here's all the toilet seats you're going to need, I think that degree of transparency often crosses that creepy line, which we have to be very careful about.
Yeah, you have to make sure that your customers expect you to know that. And then I would also say that one of the things that we found out that surprised us, and I know the Olay team has talked about this, is we were surprised how much, even when somebody went in and answered a question, how much better they felt when we echoed back to them what they had just answered. So people like that. It's almost like saying, hey, I heard you. You know, you said fine lines and wrinkles are your top concern about your skin. And I'm echoing back to you when I give you the product recommendation that this is for fine lines and wrinkles. People actually said, I know I just answered that question, but I'm really glad to know that you applied it.
That's a perfect example of transparency and a perfect example of UX design and what the product manager is dealing, not just what's coming out of the engineering team. And it's good that everybody works together on that one. Jana Eggers, this was a great discussion. Thank you so much. I enjoyed chatting with you.
I very much enjoyed chatting with you too.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.